Good morning and welcome. I'm Christopher Purdy. Today's edition of All Sides Weekend is a celebration of the arts in Central Ohio. This is an especially great time of year because all of our local arts organizations are about to open their new seasons. And to join in the fun, we have, first of all, two debutantes to this program, but we start with the adult, the amazing Janet Chen. Janet is the executive director of Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. I have said it before, I will say it again. She is the best arts manager I have ever met, and I've been around the pike a few times. Mike Stefiuk is the director of artistic planning for the Columbus Symphony, and he's here for the first time, and I hope not the last time, Mike.
Good morning.
Columbus Symphony, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And we welcome Edward Liang, who is the new artistic director of Ballet Met. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Let me start with you, Edward. Give me your first impressions of this town and the arts in this town.
Well, I think that it's pretty fantastic. It's the first city that I have seen so much collaboration and from every sort of sector that everyone wants to collaborate. It's a city that is obviously growing massively. So it's great to be a part of this growing process.
What are you looking forward to doing? What's your, you know, tell us first of all where you came from, a little bit about your career thus far, and what you think you might
want to do.
Be doing, yeah.
Right. Well, I was born in Taiwan, and I moved to...
Janet.
Oh, neighbors, yes.
Yes.
But my family moved to Northern California when I was five, and my parents were typical Chinese parents, and they pushed us to do everything. So ballet is what stuck, and I moved to New York when I was 13, and I got into New York City Ballet when I was 16. I won an international dance competition, and I got to...
Now, you were too young for Balanchine, right? Because he... Did you...
Yes.
Yeah, you were too young because he died about 30 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, he died... He passed away in 1983, and I got into the company in 1992.
I crashed his funeral. Another story for another time. Anyway, so that must have been... But that legacy is certainly the underpinning of the entire company of
yes.
Balanchine, right?
And also, I mean, I was lucky enough when I first went to New York, I immediately started working with the choreographer Joan Robbins, and I was right away in his revival for Watermill, so I worked with him until he passed away.
What does an artistic director do?
I think what an artistic director does is a steward for Ballet Met or any sort of dance company. It's to hopefully help the dancers reach their goals in their career, because the career goes so short. It goes away like this.
It starts very early, but it does end, yeah.
It does end very quickly.
It's like football, because they don't really have a lot of 50-year-old football players, but they have a lot of 19-year-old football players.
Very true. Very true. And I think that it's really to really serve the community, to make Columbus, people in Columbus, their life better quality of life, and to be a part of the arts and dance conversation, not only in Columbus, but nationally.
Well, we wish you well, and we're glad you're here. Thank you very much.
Thank you
so much.
And
you're going to jump into the conversation. My buddy Mike Stefiuk is here from the Columbus Symphony, the Director of Artistic Planning, yet another great, wonderful, corporate-sounding title. What do you do?
What do I do? I get to, as I said earlier, I get to spend the organization's money. Really, what I do is I work with our music director to help him realize his artistic vision, recommending repertoire, recommending guest artists, planning seasons, helping to keep the orchestra on a strong artistic trajectory.
So you have to be a musician first, helps. I mean, I know you are, but... Yeah.
It does help. I mean, you know, the vast amount of repertoire that's out there that orchestras and chamber ensembles can perform, it really helps to know that stuff, absolutely.
We have one more season for Jean-Marie Zaitouni. It feels like he just got here, but no, he's been here 4 or 5 years now. So you're going to be in a transition period, and you said that you work very closely with the music director. What are you going to do in his vacuum? How does that work?
Well, we do have a music director search that we're in the midst of. We have a full committee comprised of board members and staff and musicians that are looking to source for his successor. And we're looking at a number of candidates right now.
Yeah, but you and I both know it's not going to be next Tuesday. Okay?
It's not going to be next Tuesday. No, it's going to take some time for us to find somebody that's going to take us into the next chapter. It's going to be, It's going to be a good search, and I'm confident that we're going to find the right person.
Zaituni did take it up a notch. He did. He did what I think he was hired to do.
Right.
He really increased the profile very much, and he's not only a talented musician, he's very personable. He's a lot of fun to be around, and I think that's really important right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the role of a music director in the here and now is a lot different than what it was 30 years ago. So much of it is more about the off-podium time versus the podium time, you know, out there kissing hands and kissing babies and making friends. And, you know, we also want them to be committed to the music making as well. But there's so much that goes along with being a music director for orchestras these days.
Yeah, people like George Zell wouldn't have dreamt of doing anything except conduct and rehearse.
That's so true.
He was not one to play golf with the mayor.
Zell, Reiner,
Yeah. Janet Chen, you know how it goes. You know what you're doing. But you have a new music director. Well, he's in his second season now.
This is technically his first season. Oh, okay. He was designate last season.
Designate. Yeah. Okay, last season. David Donsmeyer, mm-hmm. who's married to a very lovely singer and has two kids. Yep. And he's commuting between here and Chicago.
That's right.
ProMusica is known for great repertoire, particularly new music. Mm-hmm. You keeping it alive. I think that's part of your mandate. How does he fit in that?
Oh, wonderfully. And, you know, I was listening to Mike talk about the search process is bringing back a lot of memories. But, you know, absolutely, when we were looking for Tim's successor, one of the key things was, you know, bringing a balance of, you know, our mission and making sure that continued on, but also bringing in new ideas and new energy. But it needed to be a really, you know, smooth process, and to make sure that the candidate, which ultimately we ended up choosing David, you know, really fit in well with the organization.
Well, he's a great musician. He's personable and he's sexy, let's face it.
You know?
Come on. One thing ProMusica does really well is buzz. You know, you mm-hmm. really do create, you create Thanks. The environment that you work in, that you thrive in, which I think is terrific.
Thanks.
And later on, I'm going to ask all three of you how you do that. If you would like to join the conversation with three of our best arts leaders in the community, we'd like to hear from you. You can call 292-8513. That, of course, is 614 area. 292-8513, or you can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Okay, let's get to the nitty-gritty. Mike, let's talk about the coming season of the Columbus Symphony. Having weathered several storms, you've been back full strength for a year or so now. You are facing a music director search, but Zaituni is here for this season. He is not running away. He's here doing his work, starting with Mahler. So discuss the season and how you put it together.
Well, it's a season that I'm incredibly excited about. It has a lot of warhorse repertoire that audiences are going to recognize and love, and hopefully we'll sell a lot of tickets because of that. But it also has repertoire that speaks to, again, Jean-Marie's direction and love of new music and love of certain repertoire. There's a lot of works in there that are going to be new to audiences, but again, on the programs, they're coupled with repertoire that, again, is very familiar. And it's a bit of a journey. As you mentioned, we start with the Mahler on October 5th and move into then a concert of Rachmaninoff and Brahms.
First of all, go back. When you say the Mahler, it's the Second Symphony, but tell people, if they're not familiar, what that entails.
Well, the Second Symphony of Gustav Mahler is probably his most famous work, first of all, and it's for incredibly grand forces. There's an orchestra of nearly 90 people on stage. There's a chorus of 150. There are two vocal soloists. There are offstage sections. Writings of Klopstock that Mahler heard at the funeral of von Bülow that he incorporates into this piece. It's subtitled The Resurrection, and I think when people hear the final movement of this symphony, they'll feel like they have died and gone to heaven.
You could almost hear it if you live within 3 miles of the Ohio Theater without any amplification, because we're talking about making a huge joyful noise unto everybody with this piece.
Right.
Of necessity, I would think, is the only piece on the program, because it's a full evening as it is.
It's actually going to be preceded by a couple of Bruckner motets.
Really? Oh, that's beautiful, too. That's lovely, yeah. The chorus, of course, is the all-volunteer Columbus Symphony, directed by Ronald Jenkins, they're up heroes of the local art scene, certainly.
Correct.
Especially all-volunteer as well. tell me, I'm listening to this program. I've never been to the symphony. I don't know who Mahler is, but I'm hearing big chorus. Maybe I know somebody in the chorus or the orchestra. Why should I go to this?
Well, you should go to any concert because, you know, the power of hearing live music can be life-changing. Music is in our lives every day. It's on the radio. It's in TVs. It's in movies. It's when you're filling up at the gas station, there's radios playing. There's music all around us. But there's nothing like hearing the power of an ensemble of 90 musicians together and another 140 or 50 in the chorus making these sounds that can't be produced anywhere else. It's a pretty magical experience.
I took a busload of teenagers to their first Columbus Symphony concert last year, and the comment that they made, first of all, was, "Dude, where were the mics?" And I explained that we don't use amplification.
Right.
In classical music, because people are trained to make, and they were in awe of that.
Yeah.
That really impressed them, that there was no artificial sound between. And I think that's a big deal. Here I am, a radio guy, telling you this. But with the live experience, there's nothing between you and the actual sound or sight.
That's right.
Of what's going on. And I think that's a lost art or a losing art.
Yeah.
So come to the symphony, come to ProMusica. Do you, Janet Chen, have a theme for this season?
Well, we've themed the year Sound Beginnings, and obviously it lends to, you know, David's new leadership as our new music director. But it's going to be a really great year, because really this is the year that David has put mostly his stamp on the program. Last year he was here twice, but it was a kind of a combination of you know, Tim and artistic committee's plans and David's.
So part of his job description is, what are they going to play, right?
Exactly.
He chooses the music.
Exactly.
Right?
Very similar to probably Edward, and obviously your help with Jean-Marie. Plan the whole year's program. But we kick off on October 13. And, you know, I think audiences and listeners should really try and make, you know, at least one, if not all, concerts, because you really hopefully can get a taste as to David's artistic vision, you know, his goals for the orchestra to really, you know, kick it up to the next level. But we start actually with an interesting program. It's a you alluded to our commitment to American music and new music. So we actually open with Charles Ives' Three Places in New England, which we've never done before. The orchestra's never done this. So that'll be a challenge for our musicians. And then we're actually doing a piece by Friedrich Gulda. It's a cello concerto for wind band, which is neat. It's got some
He's a jazz composer,
yeah. Yeah, it's actually in five movements, and it breaks out into a lot of jazzy improv type feel, and that's new for us. And then we close with Schubert Symphony No. 5. So we have a balance actually of American and Austrian, so go figure.
Go figure. And while you're figuring out, we're going to take a break right now and come back in 60 seconds. Don't go away. This is All Sides Weekend, the Arts. I'm Christopher Purdy. Stay tuned. Thank you, Charlie Pickard, our producer today. I'm back with our guests, Edward Lang from Ballet Met, the new artistic director. Mike Stefiuk is the director of artistic planning for the Columbus Symphony. And Janet Chen is the executive director of ProMusica Chamber Orchestra. And we are talking about the arts in Central Ohio. And if you'd like to join us, call 614-292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Edward, I want to go back to you and ask basically a day in the life question about what goes on, because I've been to Ballet Met a lot just to visit and do interviews and things. When you walk into that building 9, 10 in the morning, there's a lot of activity and a lot of people, which is nice. It's terrific to visit a place like that. What goes on?
Well, for the dancers, they come in early, and their class starts at 9:15, and I don't think a lot of people realize that a dancer has to really prep their bodies by stretching and by warming up their muscles, doing exercise so that it engages the right muscles so that they can work all day. And class is basically where they start exercising and do different formats for their body, musicality, things like that, to prep them for the day. And that usually is from 9:15 till 10:45. Then after that, from 11 to 6 with an hour off, they're rehearsing all day long. And they're putting together whatever sort of rep that we're doing at the time. And whatever rep we're doing in the next couple of months. So they're not only just always doing one ballet. Let's say, for instance, in the morning, they'll be rehearsing Swan Lake, and then 2 hours later, they'll be doing Four Seasons by James Kadalka. Then they'll be doing a new work from me. So it's really, it's really an amazing life to have, but it's very, very difficult.
And it's short, too, because the body is your instrument, and we don't hold up all that long.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Ballet Met's really lucky that we have a great partnership with OSU Sports Medicine, and they are just truly fantastic to us. And it really keeps the dancers in top form. But again, this is, I think everyone has the perception of everything's so beautiful and amazing and perfect at the ballet. But I think that what's great to understand is that how much dedication, how much work into the craft it takes for these dancers. It's a real vocation.
I've said before that for any arts organization in town, I think what the audience sees in the theater is maybe 25% of what everybody does when, you know, in terms of outreach and rehearsal and performance and preparation and things like that. And they make it look easy when it's, you know, bring on the Bengay, baby, because it's, it can hurt. Now, you said you went to New York as a 13-year-old to dance with the New York City Ballet. Were you in their school at that point, or were you actually performing, or both?
I was in the school. I was in the School of American Ballet.
That's the Harvard and MIT of dance.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was very grateful to be there with all the top students around the country and around the world. And then when I was 16, I joined New York City Ballet and started performing with them immediately. So
I probably saw you then. That's terrific. I mean, how long were you there as a dancer?
I was there twice. I left the company because I got an offer to be in a Broadway show called Fosse. And
then I did see you. Okay.
Yes. All right. And I was really grateful that Anne Ryan King came to see a performance in New York City Ballet and offered me the part. And then afterwards, I got invited by Yuri Killian to join Netherlands Dance Theater for a year. And then I went back again to New York City Ballet for a couple of years. So.
And how much of your job today involves administrative duties?
I would say half and half.
Really?
That's part of the things, that's one of the things I love about my job, believe it or not, is
I don't believe it, but okay.
I actually love to be in meetings, and I love to understand the organization, and I love to be a part of the process. And that was one of the things that attracted me to taking the job for Ballet Met, because I've been lucky where the past 10 years I've been choreographing around the world, but it's really about being more of a consultant. And when this opportunity came to me is that I can really have and be a part of this and have my fingerprints all over the organization and help together bring the organization to where we wanted to go.
And you bought a house and you're here. That's terrific. It's wonderful. I want to ask each of you, because we ask you this all the time, but it is crucial to get the people much younger than myself to be regular attendees at concerts, at dance, at theater, at whatever. There have to be all kinds of new strategies to do that. What's going on with that, Janet, to get young people?
Sure. Well, obviously, you know, kind of utilizing the youthfulness and the enthusiasm of, in our instance, of David. We look for opportunities to partner and get him out into the community. So, for example, we spoke to, and you were there too, to the entire OSU School of Music students at a convocation. And that night was our concert, and we had probably close to 75 students that were at the convocation that came to the concert. So, you know, you kind of have to think about it in steps, I would say. You know, one of the ways is to engage them and then get them in the door. Because I find often when you get them into the door, then, as you alluded, Mike, the live music, the live performance, something magical happens. And that's an experience you really can't get anywhere else. And that's what we're trying to convey to the younger students.
And, Mike, for the Columbus Symphony, the one thing that you have, you have many things, but one thing is you have the splendor, not just the live sound, but really the large orchestra playing these big works. And I would think that would be an easier sell. And I know the Symphony does a lot of outreach. Kappa does a lot of outreach and brings people in. Is there a specific programming germ, I guess, you use with a younger audience in mind? I don't mean Peter and the Wolf. I mean like Philip Glass or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few pieces on the season this year. In fact, we've got a partnership with OSU where we're presenting the world premiere of a piece by the British composer Stephen Montague, who was a doctoral student here back in the 70s. That coupled with, as you mentioned, the splendor of the orchestra, the majesty of the Ohio Theater. It's a grand theater. You know, those are approaches we're taking. Everything from how we can engage the audience from the second they walk in. We're talking with a subset committee on staff and some musicians about what do we do to entice people to get there? Do we need a DJ in the lobby? What kinds of pre-concert activities do we need? Do we need to get them having drinks with the musicians afterwards, which is always a good thing? And just basically breaking down barriers because, you know, the saying goes, even Beethoven 5, the Fifth Symphony was new to ears at one point.
Yeah.
And now it's one of the most famous pieces. And we do a lot of work with our guest artists, a lot of what Janet was referencing, a lot of community engagement activities, a lot of outreach, a lot of master classes. Basically, it's an education process.
You're doing the opera Carmen next spring.
Correct.
Which is a big undertaking, a fun undertaking, but a lot of work. That has to involve some collaboration as well.
Well, that's, you know, we're big into collaboration. We're collaborating with Opera Columbus, and we have plans in the future to collaborate with Ballet Met, and perhaps Janet and I can talk about collaborations with ProMusica. But, you know, if we're not collaborating and sharing resources as arts organizations in the city, I think we're all in trouble. We can't be siloed.
Well, you're three younger arts administrators, and so you're part of the generation to which that is. That's one of the rules of the road. You have to share the resources.
Yes.
That's new, though. Okay, somebody my age, or we weren't trained that way. We were like, I'm the ballet, and you're not, and that's it. So the tempo has definitely changed, and has that benefited you all?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just speak quickly. We've started a summer series concerts at Franklin Park Conservatory, and this technically was our second full year to do this free series. And we've conducted surveys both years to those who attended. And last year, 49% of those who attended had never been to ProMusica. And so, you know, it's statistics, but it's statistics that I think hopefully, you know, you can glean on and at least know your efforts are perhaps working and you're reaching more people in an accessible way. So,
you know, one of the things I was told doing work in radio a number of years ago, there was a seismic shift in this profession, and the F word, fun, was not approved of. That absolutely changed 180. And I think that's a good word to use. It is not a demeaning word for the performing arts at all. If you read the letters and the background of some of these composers, they were pretty randy guys, okay?
Yeah.
So
yes.
What do we do with fun, Edward?
I mean, I think that art is the one thing that will really transcend people. I think that it's a great sort of educator, whether it's music or dance. It's so part of our body and our nature. And I agree with you that the F word or fun word is, you know, I think in the past was so looked upon as commercial or something that was not of high caliber. And that's just not the truth. Mm-hmm. Is that our ballet and music, our involvement is really to create inspiration, to create fun and to create pleasure for our audience and to inspire. And I think that is the new mission for the arts in Columbus. And that's the fantastic thing about ProMusica, the Symphony, and Ballet Met is that we have a different sort of conversation and we're willing to really collaborate with each other.
Yeah. Tell me what's going on with the season, the ballet.
Well,
let's sell tickets. Come on.
Yeah, it's really exciting. The first thing that we're doing is Swan Lake, and we're collaborating with Cincinnati Ballet. And very few companies get to do the full Swan Lake because of the sheer size of it. And so we're really excited. And it's going to be October 18th, 19th, and 20th at the Ohio Theater. And then there's lots of different, like, for instance, we're doing a full James Kadelka program where he's a world-famous choreographer, and very few companies around the world are able to do a full three ballets of his.
He was here as an artistic consultant, was he? He was
yes.
sort of here for in residence before you came.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And you didn't kick him out and say, I'm the boss now, get out of here. So, Now, Swan Lake. Okay, so I'm sitting in a bar with a beer right now, a little early, and I'm hearing you talking about Swan Lake, and I'm thinking about a bunch of pretty girls in tutus running around. So why would I come to that?
Well, one, the music is an absolute masterpiece,
yeah.
And it's the sheer size and the number of dancers. And the truth is that Swan Lake is a pure blend of artistry and pyrotechnics. These ballerinas have to do 32 fuetes on
point. What's a fuete?
A fuete is when you turn and whip your leg around once, and you have to do 32 on point.
Oh, whip. That's good. Okay, yeah.
So it's definitely very, very challenging. Even for the most experienced or the biggest stars around the world. So it's I think that it's the perfect sort of blend for ballet aficionados and brand new audience members.
It sounds to me that if I were a dancer doing something like Swan Lake, which I probably have done 100 times, you can't do it on automatic pilot. Just
no,
the way
you
said that, because as your body changes, you're going to have to adapt, and your technique is going to change a little bit.
Absolutely. It's, you know, for the ballerina and for all the swans and the male dancers, is that they, especially for the main female dancer, she has to switch between two identities. The white swan, which is the more lyrical, and the black swan, which has been made very famous because of the Black Swan movie. And but it's really about two identities. And not, like I said, it's not just about the pyrotechnics, about being able to withstand 2 hours of dancing, and but being able to switch roles. So I think it's perfect.
And having it look beautiful and just and easy when, you know, you're gritting your teeth, but the audience is being really being sent by the music and the visuals, certainly, and the dancing as well. How long does it take you to choreograph a piece like that, which is long? I mean, it involves, and you probably have to change it when you have different dancers a little bit.
Well, I mean, with this particular thing, we're very lucky because we partnered with Cincinnati Ballet, and it was already pre-choreographed. And it's still a lot of work to stage, and that means to teach all the dancers the steps and put it on to counts and put it into, you know, music. But generally around 3 to 4 weeks. And for me, when I choreographed in brand new Romeo and Juliet, I only had 6 weeks from beginning to tech. So it really depends on, you know, I think for ballet, time is always money.
And they still die at the end, right? I mean, they still, you know, you can't change that. They just do it more beautifully, probably, than certainly the opera. Or
It's very similar to the opera. Someone always dies.
All right, that's good. You said, Mike, earlier, Rachmaninoff, and that rings a bell for a lot of people. He has a lot of fans, Rachmaninoff's music, and that's your first classical series concert program after the big opening of
Correct.
The Mahlitz. Let's talk about that program a little bit.
Well, the program starts with a piece by the Canadian composer, funnily enough, being that Jean-Marie is from our neighbors to the north, John Astacio, this concert overture Brio, which is, it'll be like fireworks for the orchestra. Very energetic, fun. There we go again. Great way to open the season. And then, as you mentioned, we move into the second piano concerto of Rachmaninoff, probably of the four concertos, his most famous, the big tune in the second movement, which has been turned into, I don't know, how many pop songs it's spawned.
Right. Yeah.
And then the fourth and final symphony of Brahms. Very introspective, very inward-looking symphony of this elder statesman of the Romantic era.
It's kind of the last gasp of the real Romantic era before Mahler shook them up.
That's right.
At the end of the 19th
That's
century.
That's right.
And who's conducting and who's the pianist?
So the conductor, of course, is Jean-Marie Zaituni, our music director. And the pianist is a gentleman by the name of Maxim Mogilevsky. He's from the Russian school. He's a student of, if our listeners know him, Alexander Taradze, who did a lot of work with Gergiev and the Kirov Orchestra. And the.
That's going to be a crowd pleaser, particularly with the Rachmaninoff and the Brahms. So I really want to tell people, this is a perfect, Rachmaninoff is a perfect date night, especially if you want to get to second base. Rachmaninoff really is the way to go, and the Columbus Symphony does it beautifully, and you've got a pianist from the Russian school, and on our website, WOSU.org, we will have links to all the performing arts in the state, so you can find out with one click. But I'm here to tell you, that's going to be a great show. 292-8513, if anybody wants to join in the conversation. Also, you can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Janet, tell me a little bit more about some of the pieces coming up in this season for Pro Musica that may be unfamiliar to us because they're brand new.
Sure. Well, one of the programs that we're really excited about actually takes place later in the year in February, but it's a true collaboration and collaborative effort. We are going to be doing Mozart's Great Mass in C minor, which, you know, I think most people recognize Mozart's Requiem, but the Great Mass, I mean, is just stunning. It's a difficult work. Again, this is a piece that we've never done before, but we're partnering with the Lancaster Chorale for that.
Bob Trocchia, very good.
Bob Trocchia, they're a great organization.
Yes, they are.
We are also, there are obviously four soloists involved, and Peggy Dye from Opera Columbus will be singing with us, as well as David's wife, Catherine.
Oh,
so they'll be the two sopranos.
Who gets the big aria in that? Are you going to flip heads?
We're going to let them fight
okay,
over.
Fight over. All right. Okay.
So that'll be a really stunning performance. Also, particularly Saturday, we'll be doing that at the Josephina.
Oh, yeah. And that acoustic
Sunday,
is beautiful.
Yeah, Sunday at the Southern. So listeners can really pick and choose where they want to, you know, gain that experience, which is, again, neat.
How do you decide, or how does your organization... Oh, we have to take a break. Hang on to that thought right now. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. I'm just getting so into it. We will be back in 90 seconds. Don't go away. Thank you, Charlie Pickard. We are back, All Sides Weekend, the Arts. I'm Christopher Purdy with Edward Liang, who is the artistic director of Ballet Met, and I will eventually stop massacring his last name. Mike Stefiuk is here, the director of artistic planning for the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, and Janet Chen, the executive director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. They're all neighbors. They work in the Southern Theater. They work in the Ohio Theater. They work anywhere you can put down a floor. It's good for dances or anything else. And I was asking Janet about, since Pro Musica does a lot of brand new music with the ink wet on the page, what kind of planning goes on? How do you choose a composer and a kind of a piece?
A lot of research. You know, we have a great base of board members and also committee members that, you know, help us with suggestions of, oh, you know, I've recently heard of this up-and-coming, you know, guest artist or even composer. So that helps. But also we go to the guest artists that we've worked with or are going to work with, and we say, you know, if you're committed to new music, we are too. Is there a particular composer that you know of or have in mind that you would like to explore? The process is a good 2 to 3, sometimes 4 years out. So it's a lot of pre-planning. And then it really gets into the nitty-gritty of determining, does the composer want to write only for the chamber orchestra, or is there a soloist involved? And then, you know, from there on, what kind of inspiration do we see for the piece, and also what the composer envisions.
What kind of is there a basic sound palette that a piece has to have, a new piece, to be successful or gratifying for the audience?
No.
Okay.
We try very hard not to dictate, obviously, you know, what the composer envisions to be the final product. And it's really our job as musicians to really deliver the vision of the composer and to translate it to audiences. We have folks that come and they realize they're going to get an experience that they won't get anywhere else. They're going to be part of a brand new premiere. They may like it, they may not, but they leave knowing they will be part of history, really, when you think about it.
Right, and it also, you know, the problem, I think, with new work, any new work, is repeat performances, because hearing it once is nice, but right. it's not gonna settle into you. You have to really absorb
Absolutely.
It with more performances there.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of calls, Mike Stefiuk. People say, when is the Rachmaninoff performances? So let's go back and slowly and surely tell people when they are.
So those concerts featuring the second piano concerto of Rachmaninoff are Friday and Saturday, October 11 and 12. At the Ohio Theater,
and tickets are easy to get, although I do it now because Rachmaninoff tends to clear the house. So it'll sell very, very well. When you program, do you look for sometimes your own favorites, and what would they be? We all do it.
It's hard not to.
Yeah,
of course it is.
What would they be for you?
Well, I mean, honestly, one of my favorite composers is Bruckner. There's a spirituality of his music that speaks to me. And yes, I like Mahler and the grandiose, but he can be a little bit over the top for me. And I know I'm going to get reactions for that from all of my colleagues in the orchestra.
And I love
Bruckner, too. I'm delighted to hear that.
Yeah. There's a lot of music that I like. So it's the proverbial question, if you can invite three people to dinner, who would they be? You know, right. It's
Edward, Steve, and Janet.
Exactly. I like all musics. Yeah. I have a pretty wide palette, but it's hard not to program those works that you find to be personal favorites.
Right.
And if you feel strongly enough about them, it makes it easier to sell them to your audiences. At the same time, you know, programming, everybody thinks they can do it, and maybe they can, but, you know, there's a fine balance of finding repertoire that makes sense together.
It's hard.
And that's saleable, and that the audiences are going to like, that the musicians are going to enjoy performing. They might find it challenging or rewarding. So,
Bruckner was an Austrian composer of the mid to late 19th century, and he's someone, now I have a background in music too, and he's somebody, until I was in my 30s, I thought, heavy, boring, long, depressing. And then I began to listen to it. And let's talk about that a little bit. The unexpected you get from something that's been stereotyped as something you wouldn't like ballet, like a heavy German composer, like new music.
Right.
Breaking down those stereotypes. Because, by the way, P.S., Bruckner's fantastic. Go buy CDs. Mm-hmm. Listen to Classical 101 and you'll get it there. But really, how Edward, do you get over the sort of inborn prejudice against ballet, about dance?
I mean, I think that with every company, that's our mission, is to try to reach new audiences. And I think rebrand ballet and really understand that it is not only just tutus and tiaras, and that these are absolute thoroughbred, they're artists. And I mean, it's pretty easy to sell because you have these beautiful creatures on stage. And so it's just really about rebranding and the idea of ballet. And going back to what you were saying about programming, is I think that's the beauty of ballets, is that you can have the classics and then you have the, like, for instance, we have the New Works program where we have Christopher Wheeldon's Carousel, where people don't really put two and two together that Carousel, such a, I guess, a famous, you know, Broadway and music, that it could go with ballet. And there's, you know, ballet within the show. And Christopher Wheeldon is one of the most famous choreographers out there right now. And to put these things together, that it opens the mind of what people think of ballet and what the limitations are for ballet.
You can't say that dance is dance. There are different genres of dance. But how is ballet different than modern dance or jazz or whatever that is? I even said once, I said, I thought that male dancers never went on point. I don't know if that's true or not, but that was something I was told maybe wrong. So
it's true. Mostly, well, male dancers do go on point, but they're at the Trocadero. It's a whole different sort of breed of ballet and dance.
That's another show.
Okay. Yes. But with dance, that's what is changing, is that the boundaries between ballet, modern dance, contemporary dance, it's all kind of blending together. And that's the beauty of dance and ballets, is that in one program, I would be able to program a classical work, something that's more contemporary, and then something that's really more avant-garde to push the boundaries. And I think that goes back to programming, is to entertain but yet challenge some of our audience members.
Do you think the name ballet in your company title is a problem?
I think it's fantastic.
Okay, we're talking about the stereotypes and breaking down. You really need to get yourself to the theater, okay? I mean, and that's hard, I think, these days from a marketing standpoint, getting all of us off the couch. I know it's hard. I mean, I go because I love it and it's part of my job, but I mean, really, it's hard to, you know, at 8 o'clock of a cold Saturday night to go downtown. You should, because you'll get repaid a lot, but I'm just saying, Yeah. It's a challenge, isn't it? More than it was, because now you're competing with electronic media and everybody can do everything on demand now. And I really hope that people listening to this will get into the habit of going downtown for a live presentation, because it is a different ball game than sitting in your living room watching it on a video. Yeah. They're both so wonderful, true. But they are different. Yeah. They are different experiences completely.
I think there's a reason why a lot of what we do, what the symphony's doing and what ballet's doing, why we continue to do it. It has stood the test of time.
Right, exactly right.
And yes. There's a reason for that. And so you need to get to the theater and get to the hall to experience that.
Yeah.
Here's a question, too. Let's talk about funding, because that's always the elephant in the room when we talk about the performing arts, and particularly to Edward, who's new in town, and that's going to be probably a lot part of your job is to help scare up money. It used to be even 20 years ago that the dancers danced and they didn't do anything else, and the artistic director did his job, but that's not true anymore. I would think you're all part of pounding the pavement, too, but you're pounding the same pavement. So how does that work? Are you in competition for the same dollars, or how does that happen?
I don't think so anymore. I think that it's a whole different way of, I think we've changed our thinking, and it's a new sort of paradigm shift. Instead of thinking there's a scarcity, I think that more is always more. If somebody goes to see Pro Musica, they're going to be inspired by the music, and it might open up the horizons of buying a ticket for the ballet or for the symphony. I don't really buy into the idea of that there's scarcity. I think that inspiration is always going to create more ability for us to move forward.
You're going to have a very long career. That's terrific. How about the rest of you? How do you feel about that? That's probably not a, you have enough headaches in your job, Mike.
No, but I feel, it's in our organization, at least, I think the onus is upon not only the staff, but also the artists, the musicians in our orchestra, to be responsible for being champions and ambassadors of our product. And, it's no doubt that funding is different than what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago for arts organizations and all across the country. But I think those organizations that are thriving and surviving and doing well these days are the ones that are imaginative, are collaborative, that are bucking trends. And, based on the conversations Edward and I have already had, and as I mentioned, hopefully Janet and I, we're looking at a true spirit of collaboration again, where we can pool the resources, the limited resources we have perhaps together to create something that's unique and can be art form changing and be something that'll be new and exciting for audiences here in Columbus.
Something I found out because of after living here for 20 plus years, which I didn't expect, was the arts have always thrived in Columbus. Seriously, not just in the state, not in Cleveland and Cincinnati, where they're known for years. They're ingrained in the DNA of the city. But here in Central Ohio, there's always been a great deal going along. And certainly the symphony was and is the leading light in making that happen. But I think in financial good times and bad, you could always go downtown or elsewhere and see a quality presentation of something. So that does speak to what you said, Janet. It stands the test of time.
Yeah,
people,
absolutely,
you know,
does. Yeah.
People would, what's left to do then? How are we going to shore up the next 20 years?
Well, I agree with both what Edward and Mike said. You know, I think arts organizations have had to shift the approach and the way we think about presenting product. Again, many of these pieces we're doing have been performed hundreds of years, but how do we present it and how do we market it? I think that's the challenge and that's the trick is, you know, how to make it relevant in people's lives. So, you know, with the whole combination of being stretched for funding, but also the opportunity to create differently and to think differently has given us, you know, I think a lot of respect, I think, within the community. I think the challenge for many executive directors around town is how can we engage even, you know, the corporate leaders and the civic leaders to really help us appreciate and understand all the hard work that goes behind the scenes to make a beautiful product. So,
Bill Connor, who's the head of CAPA, the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts, told me a great story about audience outreach that he said he was doing a focus group with young professionals and wanted to see what it would take to get them to become regular subscribers to all of your presentations. And one woman got up and said, "How come we can't take our drinks to the seats in the theater?"
You can do that.
And he was really, taken aback by that. And he said, I think at the end of the meeting, he said, "Drink away, come bring them in."
Sure.
Because people had this, you know, you have to sit up straight in the dark and just sort of be very, very, not scratch yourself or anything, and be very, very polite. I'm here to, I can't, speak for the theater managements and say you can bring in your popcorn or whatever. But I'm just saying, it's not like that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's really not like that anymore. I mean, you can. And talk to me a little bit, Edward, about your facility on your property at Ballet Met, the theater in the back there, which I love.
Ballet Met's really lucky to have its own black box theater and performance space. There's very few companies in the United States that has this ability to have a performance space of their own. So the dancers have time, even when they're not performing on stage outside in the Ohio Theater or at the Capitol, that they can have this stage experience. And we get to have presentations and possibly do children's ballets. Who knows? But that gives more possibility for Ballet Met to be more engaging.
But the point I wanted to make, too, is you're sitting within. You could touch the dancers almost.
Absolutely.
You shouldn't. But I'm just saying you are right there to see. You can see the effort and the grace and the training it takes to do that. And that's also a point to be made with orchestral musicians. They go through a lot to get into their seats in various theaters in terms of training and background and work. And I also like to say about our area musicians, they are teaching your kids. They are the ones who are in the vanguard of music in all its genres here in town. And again, the reason this has always been a good town for music is that we have a lot of great musicians and artists living here and dancers living here. So I do want to make that point because I think it's important that people understand that. We've got about 4 minutes left, folks, so I want you to wrap it up and sell. Janet Chen.
All right, David Dansmeyer, new music director, opening night, October 13. We've got a great season plan. I also just quickly want to mention, many listeners may not realize, we've also created a new role for the violinist Vadim Gluzman.
Yeah, talk about that.
Who
yeah.
is not a stranger to Columbus and actually played with the symphony, I think, in May.
That's right.
Stunning violinist. He's now in the role of creative partner and principal guest artist, meaning in the next 3 to 5 years, he will come to Columbus with Pro Musica at least twice a year and play lead, meaning not necessarily will have a conductor, but he will either lead from the soloist position or the concertmaster chair. Again, sort of this idea of stretching the musicians, challenging them to think a little bit outside the box and give audiences a little different taste. So.
And Mike, before you answer the question, I did want to ask where you came from and something about your background, your training. What was your instrument or instruments and where were your previous jobs?
I'm originally from the Chicago area and grew up with the Chicago Symphony in my backyard during the Schulte days. So inevitably...
He was fun.
He was fun to watch, absolutely.
Yeah.
So inevitably, being from Chicago, I had to play a brass instrument. So I played trombone professionally, went to school in Chicago, went to school in Boston. I've worked with a number of orchestras besides the Columbus Symphony, and a lot of big cities. Don't play trombone anymore. Still trying to recover from that. But
I don't mean to look at your lips. I'm not trying to be rude here. Well, what's that like? I mean, you, Edward, and you're an oboist, Janet.
Flutist.
Right? Flute. I beg your pardon. So you're all have played and danced and worked professionally. What's that transition like to not doing it so much? Well, you do, Edward. But
I love it.
Okay.
For me, I had no problems with not being a performer, and being a choreographer for me, I don't really particularly like watching my own ballets, but I love the process of it, and I think that. What's incredible for all of us being in this business and transitioning to something else is that we're still a part of it. At the same time, we know so much about it. I'm able to guide my dancers to this type of career because I've gone through all the different stages.
You all know where the bodies are buried. Let's put
exactly.
it that way, okay? Because you've done it, and you've been buried yourself probably more than once in your careers. And I think that isn't. And you get. I think you get very resilient, don't you? I mean, you really because you've already done the hard part, which is learning the art, which is devastating and hard. Yeah. How long, Mike, have you been an administrator? Full time, as opposed to a musician.
I've been an administrator now 15 years.
Okay. And so. Orchestral administration is probably not as much fun as ballet because you're up and moving around. You're actually doing it. So how's it going for you?
Well, here in Columbus, it's great. I mean, the art season here is fantastic. as I mentioned, I've lived in a lot of major cities, and Columbus is one of the best kept secrets in terms of everything it has to offer, from the arts, the number of great restaurants, the number of great neighborhoods, the people, the academic feel with the Ohio State in our backyard. It's a great, great city, and I think that lends itself to a number of great opportunities for our arts organizations to continue to thrive.
You get to be fat and love the arts in Central Ohio. I'm speaking only for myself, nobody else. I do thank you all. I haven't had this much fun really in a program for a while, and I'm delighted that Edward Lang is here. Welcome to Columbus,
thank
the
you.
Artistic director of Ballet Met. I'm delighted that Mike Stefiuk is here to really shake it down at the Columbus Symphony in the Ohio Theater.
Thanks,
opening October 5th with Mahler's Second Symphony, which will be broadcast live on Classical 101. I'm sorry, there you are. And Janet Chen, Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, its executive director, going from triumph to triumph. Do go check our website, WOSU.org, which will have information on all of the performing arts, or call me up on the phone and I'll tell you. Thank you, Charlie Pickard. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7. And WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support comes from Marburn Academy, a leader in college preparatory education for ADHD and dyslexic students. Marburn is hosting a community parent seminar, How a High School Designed for ADHD Students Can Make All the Difference, Tuesday evening, September 24th at 7. More at marburnacademy.org.